The outer portions of the basalt layer became solid, and the wandering continents came to rest, frozen into place with oceans between them. In spite of theories to the contrary, the weight of geologic evidence seems to be that the locations of the major ocean basins and the major continental landmasses are today much the same as they have been since the very early period of the Earth's history. But this is to anticipate the story, for when the moon was born, there was no ocean. The gradually cooling Earth was enveloped in heavy layers of cloud, which contained much of the water of the new planet. For a long time, its surface was so hot that no moisture could fall without immediately being reconverted to steam. This dense, perpetually renewed cloud covering must have been thick enough that no rays of sunlight could penetrate it. And so the rough outlines of the continents and the empty ocean basins were sculptured out of the surface of the earth in darkness, in a Stygian world of heated rock and swirling clouds and gloom. As soon as the earth's crust cooled enough, the rains began to fall. Never have there been such rains since that time. They fell continuously, day and night, days passing into months, into years, into centuries. They poured into the waiting ocean basins, or falling upon the continental masses, drained away to become sea. That primeval ocean, growing in bulk as the rain slowly filled its basins, must have been only faintly salt. But the falling rains were the symbol of the dissolution of the continents. From the moment the rain began to fall, the lands began to be worn away and carried to the sea. It is an endless, inexorable process that has never stopped. The dissolving of the rocks, the leaching out of their contained minerals, the carrying of the rock fragments and dissolved minerals to the ocean. And over the eons of time, the sea has grown even more bitter with the salt of the continents. In what matter the sea produced the mysterious and wonderful stuff called protoplasm, we cannot say. In its warm, dimly lit waters, the unknown conditions of temperature and pressure and saltiness must have been the critical ones for the creation of life from non-life. At any rate, they produced the result that neither the alchemists with their crucibles nor modern scientists in their laboratories have been able to achieve. Before the first living cell was created, there may have been many trials and failures. It seems probable that within the warm saltiness of the primeval sea, certain organic substances were fashioned from carbon dioxide, sulfur, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, and calcium. Perhaps these were transition steps from which the complex molecules of protoplasm arose. Molecules that somehow acquired the ability to reproduce themselves and begin the endless stream of life. But at present, no one is wise enough to be sure. Those first living things may have been simple microorganisms, rather like some of the bacteria we know today. Mysterious borderline forms that were not quite plants, not quite animals, barely over the intangible line that separates the non-living from the living. It is doubtful that this first life possessed the substance chlorophyll, with which plants in sunlight transform lifeless chemicals into the living stuff of their tissues. Little sunshine could enter this dim world, penetrating the cloud banks from which fell the endless rains. Probably the sea's first children lived on the organic substances then present in the ocean's waters, or, like the iron and sulfur bacteria that exist today, lived directly on inorganic food. All the while, the cloud cover was thinning. The darkness of the nights alternated with palely illuminated days, and finally the sun, for the first time, shone through upon the sea. By this time, some of the living things that floated in the sea must have developed the magic of chlorophyll. Now they were able to take the carbon dioxide of the air and the water of the sea, and of these elements in sunlight, build the organic substances they needed. So the first true plants came into being. Another group of organisms lacking the chlorophyll but needing organic food found they could make a way of life for themselves by devouring the plants. So the first animals arose, and from that day to this, every animal in the world has followed the habit it learned in the ancient seas and depends directly or through complex food chains on the plants for food and life. As the years passed, and the centuries, and the millions of years, the stream of life grew more and more complex. From simple one-celled creatures, others that were aggregations of specialized cells arose, and then creatures with organs for feeding, digesting, breathing, reproducing. Sponges grew on the rocky bottom of the sea's edge, and coral animals built their habitations in warm, clear waters. Jellyfish swam and drifted in the sea. Worms evolved, and starfish, and hard-shelled creatures with many jointed legs, the arthropods. The plants, too, progressed from the microscopic algae to branched and curiously fruiting seaweeds that swayed with the tides and were plucked from the coastal rocks by the surf and cast adrift. During all this time, the continents had no life. There was little to induce living things to come ashore, forsaking their all-providing, all-embracing Mother Sea. The lands must have been bleak and hostile, beyond the power of words to describe. Imagine a whole continent of naked rock, across which no covering mantle of green had been drawn. A continent without soil, for there were no land plants to aid in its formation and bind it to the rocks with their roots. Imagine a land of stone, a silent land, except for the sound of the rains and winds that swept across it. For there was no living voice, and no living thing moved over the surface of the rocks. Meanwhile, the gradual cooling of the planet, which had first given the earth its hard granite crust, was progressing into deeper layers. And as the interior slowly cooled and contracted, it drew away from the outer shell. This shell, accommodating itself to the shrinking sphere within it, fell into folds and wrinkles, the earth's first mountain ranges. Geologists tell us that there must have been at least two periods of mountain building, often called revolutions, in that dim period so long ago that the rocks have no record of it. So long ago that the mountains themselves have long since been worn away. Then there came a third great period of upheaval and readjustment of the earth's crust, about a billion years ago. But of all its majestic mountains, the only reminders today are the Laurentian Hills of eastern Canada and a great shield of granite over the flat country around Hudson Bay. The epochs of mountain building only served to speed up the processes of erosion by which the continents were worn down and their crumbling rock and contained minerals returned to the sea. The uplifted masses of the mountains were prey to the bitter cold of the upper atmosphere, and under the attacks of frost and snow and ice, the rocks cracked and crumbled away. The rains beat with great violence upon the slopes of the hills and carried away the substance of the mountains in torrential streams. There was still no plant covering to modify and resist the power of the rains. And in the sea, life continued to evolve. The earliest forms have left no fossils by which we can identify them. Probably they were soft-bodied, with no hard parts that could be preserved. Then, too, the rock layers formed in those early days have since been so altered by enormous heat and pressure under the foldings of the Earth's crust that any fossils they might have contained would have been destroyed. For the past 500 million years, however, the rocks have preserved the fossil record. By the dawn of the Cambrian period, when the history of living things was first inscribed on rock pages, life in the sea had progressed so far that all the main groups of backboneless or invertebrate animals had been developed. But there were no animals with backbones, no insects or spiders, and still no plant or animal had been evolved that was capable of venturing onto the forbidding land. So for more than three-fourths of geologic time, the continents were desolate and uninhabited, while the sea prepared the land.